Welcome to another episode of Fed Ninjas. Narek and I are incredibly blessed to be able to have Joe Sullivan on the show with us. Joe is the CEO of Ukraine Friends, but he is also an expert in AI, and especially AI within the realm of cybersecurity. When we were first introduced to Joe, it was a subject that was near and dear to us, but especially with all the AI that is coming out and its various applications, we thought it was an opportune time to speak with Joe and to get an environmental check to see what we need to prepare for. So Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Well, Narek, I'm going to kick it over to you since you are the cybersecurity guru. And I know that you and Joe have been having some pretty great conversations on the side about its application in cybersecurity. Narek, take it away.
Hey, thanks, Maurice. Yeah, I want to hear more from Joe and less from myself on this one because he's got the expertise. Just my little bit of using AI and more ML, machine learning, for cybersecurity defense has been more on the security operations center side, where we used it to look at logs and then escalate things that a human probably couldn't see going through millions and millions of lines of coding and logs and different things like that. So that's my very limited view of this with AI and ML, but Joe has some amazing experience. I guess, Joe, when did the first time that you started using artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I think there's some different terms that we can use to talk about artificial intelligence. But for me, it really began during the time that I was working at companies that were moving from a rules-based approach to a model-based approach to detecting badness. And so that goes back to, honestly, it goes back to my time at eBay and PayPal. I left PayPal in 2008 to go to Facebook, and we were already very actively by then using models to detect fraud and abuse. And then I got to Facebook, and from the earliest days was a company that cared about analyzing data, you know, collecting data, analyzing it, monetizing it, and also creating better experiences for the people using the product. And so it was in those companies. And then when I went to Uber, even more so. I joined Uber in 2015. And I remember thinking, wow, every single organization inside the company has a small data science team as part of that team. And so like being responsible for rider and driver safety, we were using data machine learning to deal with every kind of issue there. We would use something called telematics, which is looking at the phone of the driver and analyzing how is it moving through space. Is it, you know, is it at an angle like this all the time, meaning that it's docked and safe and the driver's not holding their phone while they're driving? So we were using technology to analyze what's happening in the car. We would also use natural language processing models to look at customer support cues. A lot of times when someone's in an urgent situation, they're not following the flows in the report. And if there's an emergency, we wanted to get that signal as quickly as possible. So we wouldn't just wait and see if the person got in the right reporting queue. We'd use data science to analyze every single thing they did in the process of trying to report to flag and prioritize the most important things. I've had the good fortune of being at technology first organizations that had centralized data science structures, so that the data was stored in the right way and then had teams working on the data throughout. If it's a core to the company, it's an area they invest in, and I got to ride along for decades, basically.
Sorry for butting in like that, but you had to see some incredible things as this was utilized in the essence of a security, especially with those big name companies like a Facebook and an Uber. What were some of the first things that you started to notice that it began to help with? But then more importantly, well, not more importantly, but then moving forward, what do you see the trends are now as far as the use of AI?
Yeah, I mean, back then, one of the amazing things we were able to do was use the way computers could analyze and do facial recognition. You know, something we talk about a lot, facial recognition, and imagine situations where, you know, like for example, at Uber, we were worried about, you know, somebody goes through, passes the background check, clears, and then has a bunch of hours of driving. But what if they give their phone to someone else to drive because they were too tired? How do we make sure that it's So we created an automated selfie check. So like, somebody's logging on to drive for the 12th hour in that day. You're kind of like, this doesn't seem right. Is it really the same person? And you have them take a selfie and you do a liveness check and you do a check against the driver's license you have on file with. So there's so many things you could do to improve safety and security. On the cybersecurity side in particular, it's proving really valuable on the detection side of things. So what we do in cybersecurity on the detection side is typically gather a ton of logs, different types of metadata, different types of logs. And then, historically, we would create models that had to be based on what we call known bad. So think about spam. You see 100 spams, you can train an engine on what the next piece of spam is going to be. But when you have active adversaries, you don't necessarily have a lot of bad to model against. And so that's where the AI can do a much better job of going through and identifying anomalous characteristics and putting it up to the forefront so that the team can look at it, determine whether it's something that should be a red flag.
This is incredibly fascinating. I would never have known about that live check and just knowing, because I've taken a ton of Ubers in my time and understanding that those little things are in place, that gives me a sense of comfort. And that's what I enjoy about this cybersecurity route. Eric, I'm just wondering, what other things would you see that you'd want to have answered in this realm? Because this is a perfect gelling of your two expertises. If that's a proper word.
Yeah, wow. I mean, there's so many things. I think one of the biggest things too is I was just chatting with someone earlier about this today that they're making policies in their company, and it's like, hey, we don't want people using AI because we don't know what it is. And so people are going to use it anyway. And that's called shadow IT when you're doing things that the IT department isn't aware of because it's not supported. It could break. People could depend on it. And then it becomes a large problem when it breaks and because it's not supported by your IT department. And nobody knows what's going on. So really, companies need to understand and they need to embrace AI, machine learning, robotics, process automation, RPA. They need to understand that these are things that can help us. They can help us solve problems. They can help us with speed of automation. They can help us go through vast amounts of data. And so being able to put some of the guardrails or the safety procedures around AI and doing it properly is the best way to go about it. And so having this as a part of the IT security governance, saying, okay, here's what we looked at. We looked at the risks. We've had our legal teams even look at this. We've had other risk teams look at it. And these are the proper ways and bounds that we're going to do this. So that's what I like to see is I like the development. Some of the things that Joe mentioned, I've kind of heard about these, but just hearing him talk about them, it's pretty incredible. And also when you think about the safety features, I mean, having that live check to ensure that it's the right driver, that's something that's incredibly safe for people because yeah, obviously somebody takes their phone, they impersonate an Uber driver, and then they're going to kidnap somebody or something bad could happen. So when it comes down to a lot of these safety precautions, I think that's where we really need to take that approach to say, look, we can use this technology to do things for good. Let's not just think it's going to do things that are bad and take everybody's jobs and all of this, when in fact, really, it creates more jobs because we're trying to use AI to be able to build new things and to figure out how to do things better.
Yeah, I think there are two compelling reasons why every security team should be using AI themselves. One is security is adversarial by nature. Unlike other roles inside corporations, there are bad guys trying to attack the corporation and its customers, and one team is responsible for countering them. If the bad guys are going to use AI, then we have to use it too. It's an arms race. It's a technology arms race. And so if the other side's getting more sophisticated, we have to build just as sophisticated tools for ourselves. So that's argument number one. Argument number two is that a big role that security teams should be playing is making sure that the company that they work at is using the AI response. Think about this. Do we ask people who've never driven a car to come up with the safety features for cars? No,
No.
because the more you use the product, the better you understand the risks. And so if the security team decides to put their head in the sand and not actually use AI, and like they're just not going to understand it to the same extent. It's like having the team that refuses to embrace the technology coming up with the rules for how to use it responsibly doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's a super good point.
It is a great point. And Eric, you brought the term guardrails. And Joe, I'm wanting to know from your point of view, how would you work with the companies for them to identify what those guardrails are, and how would you go about implementing them?
Yeah, this is the question of the day that we're I think everybody's spending a lot of time on. You know, we see here in the United States, I think a bipartisan committee of people from Congress just said that they're going to work on it and, you know, figure out what the guardrails should be. But I don't think we need to convene massive or events to get started right now. At its simplest, the risks are the same as the risks we've been dealing with forever in cybersecurity. We look at two, like generally speaking, what are these models? They're software. There's a team of people that's building software. So we need to make sure that they're using good software development practices, just like always. The other thing that's happening here with AI is it trains on data. And everybody says that a particular model is only as valuable and as effective as the data it trains against. And so that's probably the biggest risk area for most companies right now, is that they're letting the, you know, what data are we going to give the model access to? And then does the person, you know, we think about it inside companies like this. Only the people inside the company who need to have access to the data to do their job should have that access. The danger is in implementing the AI model that the user of the AI suddenly becomes able to access more data than that they should for their job. And so, you know, we see people playing games with the prompts that they put into the AI to try and get access to data that you could see people, if the company was training the AI models to make that are all about company efficiency, and the AI models have access to everything that's going on in the exec room. Does that mean an employee can query and see that they're going to be layoffs next week? Like the AI might, you know, or that the company has sensitive customer data that you shouldn't have access to in your role, and all of a sudden you get to see customer credit card information when you had no need for it. There's so many different things like that. So, but what we're talking about is data access. And so we have to think about and police who has access to the data, and do we create different models for different teams? There are architectural and data access questions that are no different than the questions we've been wrestling with for a long time in cybersecurity.
I 100% agree with that, and I think that is one of the big parts is data, because if you think about it, you have control of data that you're putting into the prompts. For example, if you say, "Hey, rewrite this paper that I've got." Well, is that intellectual property from your company? Does it contain some bits of maybe customer data or something like that? And when you send it somewhere else, you're sending it out of the control of your own network, your own span of control that you're supposed to take care of things with your own access that's guarded by your own systems and all the security controls around those systems. You're sending it outside of that. Now, even to put that one layer further, if you look at some of the things that the hacker community uses, let's say prompt injection for the prompts, it's very similar to any other attack that hackers would use, kind of similar to cross-site scripting or SQL injection, where they're going, if you look on OWASP top 10 for AI, you're going to see this as command prompt injection for prompt. So basically, what's going to happen is somebody's going to put a prompt out there, and let's say they script it, they automate it, and they rely on it every day to do something. It's going to say, "Hey, let's send these data fields into this." It's going to send it to AI. It's going to come back with a return. We're going to use that information to do something and process it. Okay, so you sit there, you go, "Okay, this looks really good. Now that I've tested a few times, I'm just going to let it run. It's going to run every day on a scheduled basis." Well, if you're not aware of what's happening and somebody gains access to be able to prompt inject that, they can either inject something into that to change the integrity of what you meant it to say. So you could say, "Okay, send me all red baseball caps," or whatever it is, right? A product. Let's say we're dealing in retail. But then you expand it to say, "Okay, give me information on all blue t-shirts along with that." An attacker does this, right? And so they're grabbing more information. And then if they're siphoning that off, like a man in the middle type of attack, you have no idea what's going on unless you're watching that very closely. So there's got to be monitoring and controls that you're able to understand what's going on at all time. But also you have to have security around things like your AI prompts to make sure that you're not suspect to command prompt injection or things like that. It adds a whole other realm of cybersecurity controls in which you've got to account for, which you didn't before. But like Joe said, these are basic things. These are software development lifecycle type of things that you should be doing anyway. It just adds more to it when you're doing it with AI.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think if you look at the OWASP top 10 for LLMs, 9 of the 10 are not specific to AI. They're just like best practices for any kind of code stuff. I think the only one in the top 10 is training data poisoning specifically to AI, but then not something you'd see in typical OWASP talking about application security more generally.
Yeah, it
system.
comes down to the same things, right? I mean, yeah, go ahead, Maurice. You
No,
probably got
go
more.
ahead. No, go. I just had one other question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the same basics. And when you're doing things like in a DevOps environment where people are continuing to build software all the time and they build their little part, it contributes up to a tree and then it makes a major build. And you might be doing this every day. And so it's the same part in software development lifecycle where you look at these security controls. You look at things like static application security testing, where you're looking at code. You're looking at all of this stuff to say, this found a defect in this code, and here could be the possible repercussions. Here's a remedy on how you could possibly fix that. So really, it's taking all of that and putting it through that type of check to ensure that you're not having these problems. But then also looking at it from like a policy point of view, saying, okay, we realize that our company, people are going to use AI. Let's use it responsibly. Here are the guidelines that you're supposed to be using it. And then, of course, monitoring it, making sure that you're not losing data or causing major problems with it.
This is such a fascinating discussion coming from a novice point of view. This is like something I'm watching out of a science fiction type of movie here. But with that being said, AI, you brought up a couple of things of guardrails as far as model software development practices, police who has access to the data. I'd like to know, putting your prognosticator hats on, what are some other things that you think we need to be aware of as we move into this? This is so new right now. Someone told me that this is Google in 1996. With that being said, what do you think we need to start to look out for, or what are some of the things that you think are potential problems that might reveal themselves along the way, just given what you've seen so far?
Yeah, for me, it's really just, I don't want to repeat the cycle that we've gone through in some other areas where technology has advanced really quickly, is that we have a tendency to not regulate, but to let innovation flow in the United States. And generally speaking, it's proven to be a good philosophical approach in terms of companies developing new technologies. But sometimes we don't do enough fast enough to protect the weakest and those who don't have access to the, and at the same, don't get access for everybody to the technology. So, like, as a society, we have obligations bigger than just kind of running really fast inside one corporation. We need to think about, how does it impact the people who don't have access to the technology? And are the people using the technology going to be looking at ways to abuse it, that the corporations that are excited about developing it don't have the incentive to get ahead of those societal risks? You know, we think about child safety on the internet. It's been a 30-year struggle where a lot of children have gotten harmed and corporations don't fully take responsibility. And the government doesn't have the ability to do everything because the data is in the hand of the private sector. And we don't want to give the government full access to all the data in the private sector. And so, like, we get into these difficult trade-offs where we tend to look the other way. And then, you know, the people who are least able to protect themselves get hurt. So it's a good thing that we're having the safety conversations at a higher societal level now than we have in some of the more other recent technology innovation cycles.
Yeah, those are good points. I think that Joe mentioned something early on that is probably the key out of all of this, is companies just can't ignore it and say, no, we're not going to use it, because people are going to use it within companies. Again, just today I talked to people and they said, yeah, this company said they weren't using it and we found out that they were. So people are going to use it no matter, you know, if they're using APIs or if they're using other part LLMs or whatever it might be, generative AI or something like that. But it's understanding what your company is wanting to do with AI, and then also understanding what it should be doing, and then figuring out the proper way to do that and meeting with each other, having the top department heads of different business units, including legal and all of these others, because the legal department can help you. They worry about a lot of these things. I've talked to them many times and they say, wow, I'm glad somebody's looking at this because we're always worrying about it. We didn't know what it did, but we heard bad things about it. And so getting all these people together, bringing information, doing research, asking people that are using the technology, and then having a plan on how you should be using it in order to help your business. I think that that's the key. And then going about it the right way. And so, to answer your question earlier about, you know, this is like search was way back in the day. Well, it's very powerful because you can build a lot with AI in a quick amount of time. It's like an accelerator. So, if you think about it, like if you took AI, combined it with 3D printing and Minecraft and said, okay, go build me a city, right? It could build a city for you correctly, or it could build something crazy. Who knows? that's where you've got to really think about it and architect it and design it properly and design it with safety in mind and proper information security in mind. And of course, you want to protect the data. You want to protect your company's data, your customers' data, third-party data, and all of that intellectual property that you have as well.
You touched on one thing that's important that I think push on a little more, which is that it's not just at the company level, it's at the individual employee level where people are making decisions about using AI technology. I see it over and over again. I join a meeting and there's an AI meeting note taker. I don't know if those are approved by whatever company that employee works at, but that thing is taking incredibly copious notes of everything that happened during that meeting, which is something that never, like, the company didn't have that level of data before. So now we're using AI and we're getting a lot more sensitive data. And where's that being stored? And it's kind of like, I remember when people started using Grammarly, and Grammarly seems like a great product in terms of like a browser plugin that will tell you when you have typos. But at a corporation, do you really want every single email that's being written shipped off to some other company that you don't know anything about their security? And so when we start deploying these AI tools, even these little ones, who has access to that data? Again, goes back to that simple question. And employees are so empowered to be able to add these plugins, to add little tools to their workflows. And they're motivated to, because instead of having to take notes during this full meeting, I just had the AI do it for me and I have much better notes. And to-do list is generated automatically. And so I'm a much more efficient, effective employee because of the AI, but the company might not know I'm doing all this.
So many things to consider here. And I have a feeling that once this goes out, there's going to be other questions that come in. I need to ask you, Joe, if you'd be willing to come back and speak some more, because this has been absolutely fascinating.
Sure, happy to do so.
I don't want to cut you off, Eric, if there's anything else that you have to ask.
Yeah, Maurice, we need to have Joe come back, because as this changes and evolves and we hear things in the news and see all of these things happen, we can understand it a little bit more. But yeah, completely agree with whatever you're putting into these systems. Does it stay within your company control or does it go somewhere else? And understanding that, and everybody at the company understanding that, is super important.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.